Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, it's pop quiz time once again. This is the second part in our series. How much do you know about creative financing? Jeff came up with a list of questions and he's quizzing me on the show. And I hope you guys are out there following along, trying to answer these questions because, you know, it really will give you an idea of how much you know about creative financing. So if you haven't listened to our last episode, go back and listen to that. We talked about the five different strategies for creative financing, pros and cons of each. We talked about, tax benefits to the seller and due on sale clause and... Does that kind of sum it up, Jeff?
Yeah, we're gonna jump around a bit, so each episode might have a little more focus on some things, but we're jumping around. It's not like it's all in a chronological order or anything like that. And some is gonna be about deal structuring, some is numbers, some is understanding what it is that you're trying to accomplish. I think that we talked quite a bit last episode on understanding what is the end goal, being, hey, what state am I working in, what's the default process, what's the what am I trying to do so that I know what strategy to use. And right. This time it'll be totally different, so we got to see if you really are getting everything, Jonathan.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. So let's talk about what is the difference between simple interest and amortization.
Man, okay. So simple interest is like you have a balance that you're paying an annual interest rate on.
Interest only.
Yeah, it's more of an interest only. Amortization is where you get principal pay down, and then with that principal pay down, the percentage of interest that you're paying, that amount goes down over time. So it's interest heavy on the front end. And then as you get to the end of an amortization schedule, it's way more principal pay down than interest. That's kind of a ambiguous thing. Like,
so amortization, let's try to simplify this a little bit. Amortization means that you have a debt that you're going to pay off with interest over a period of time. So if it's amortized over 30 years, you make payments for 30 years, then your debt should be paid off. If it's 15-year amortization, then you make payments for 15 years and your debt should be paid off. With simple interest, you continue to make that debt, but you don't make any principal payments. It's only interest. The principal stays intact. So let's take this one step further, just super quick. Figure out simple interest. If I have a $100,000 loan and I'm charging 5%, it's a simple calculation. 100,000 times 0.05, right? 5%, yep. Equals 5,000, right?
Yep.
And then if we wanted to know what it would be per month, we would divide it by 12.
Correct.
Okay, so that's simple interest.
Yep, and that'd be 416 a month.
Okay, so now let's do the calculator. The same thing, $100,000, which would be our present value, 5%, which would be our interest rate. Let's say amortized over 30 years. We'll enter that in. And so our payment's $536.82. What was our simple interest payment?
$416.66.
Okay, so you see there's a difference between the two, right?
Yep.
Okay. So amortization is where you have a debt that will be paid off within whatever amount of years that you've agreed to amortize. Simple interest is interest only that never gets paid off until you start paying the principal.
Right.
Okay.
The principal is paid in full.
All right. So let's go back to a calculator question here.
Okay.
Using a financial calculator, which I think makes everyone a little bit nervous.
Okay.
It gets everyone on edge, right? If
I know it did me for a while there when we first started this.
Well, you remember we've interviewed Mike Cowper a number of times, right?
Yeah.
Mike recently, like within the last week and a half, told me he always used some kind of app for amortization. He still was too afraid to deal with a financial calculator. He finally did it and he realized it's not that hard.
It's not as hard as you think.
It is not that hard. And I promise you, it is not that hard.
Yep.
But how many variables or keys on your financial calculator do you need to be familiar with?
Basically? Five.
That's right.
Five. So it's term, it's interest rate, it's present value, which is the debt owed, it's payment, and then future value if you're trying to figure out what a balloon payment is.
Awesome. Very good. All right.
And I know that, guys, because I have my financial calculator pulled up right here in front of me.
You want to let's take this one step and then we'll cover basically all of the financial calculator questions.
Okay.
Okay. So you just listed all of them. Let's talk about, so present value, what would that be?
That's the debt owed. That's the debt you're borrowing.
Okay. So that's the amount of debt.
It's the principal balance.
Okay. I/YR is what?
Interest rate. And that stands for slash year.
Okay. So if I was to put in interest rate, when we just talked about doing simple interest, when we multiply it, we converted it to a decimal. Do we convert it to a decimal here, or do we just enter it in as normal?
Yeah. So we just, if it's 5%, you push five and then you hit the I/YR button.
If it's 5.5%,
then you go 5.5.
Okay.
If you're doing it in your calculator, then it would be 0.055 would be half, you know, 5.5%.
If you were doing it as simple interest, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. In your calculator. Yeah. Not on a financial calculator.
Right. Okay. And N is what?
N is the term. That's kind of the, what does N stand for on the calculator, Jeff?
Yeah, I don't know.
that's the thing that always confuses
me. I don't know why they chose N.
That's why people are afraid to use a financial calculator, because it's like, what does N mean? It should be.
I'm sure that there's, I'm sure it has some kind of symbolic, I could probably look it up right now and probably find out, but who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That means the term. Yeah. Okay.
And how would that be entered in?
And that is entered in months, not years.
Okay. So give an example.
So as like we just did, a 30-year mortgage would be 360 months. So you'd enter 360 for the term. And say you were doing a 5-year, you would enter in 60 months for the term.
Okay. So it's whatever the amount of years times 12.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, then last two. So payment is obvious, right? Yep. If we're ever entering payment into our calculator, what is the one thing we have to know when we're entering it into our calculator?
Oh, we have to know that it's a negative number.
Always a negative number.
Yes, right? We have to push negative. Otherwise, the equation's all messed up. Okay. You won't get the right answer.
Good.
So you enter payment in as negative. And if you enter in your present value, your interest rate, your term, and then you hit payment, you'll notice that it shows up as a negative number.
That's right, because it's an outgoing number. Correct. As opposed to incoming.
Yeah, it's debt.
Okay, and then let's describe what the last FV stands for and when you would want to use it.
So FV stands for future value, and we use it to determine what we owe at the end of a term. So if we're doing a 5-year, we determine what that value is by hitting future value. And then you have to change the in. So you have to go back and change, say we wanted to, so on our last example, $100,000 borrowed at 5% interest for 360 months. If we wanted to find out what our future value is at the end of that term, at the end of 5 years, we would enter in 60 for in, and then we would hit future value. And at the end of
that, give you what? What would that give you?
That would give us the balloon payment owed at the end of that 5 years, which would be $91,828 and some change.
And so what is a balloon payment?
Great question. So balloon payment is the principal balance that is owed at the end of a specified term. If it's not, if the loan isn't taken to the end of an amortization schedule, or if you're just using simple interest. So if you're using simple interest on $100,000 after 5 years, you would still owe $100,000. In our example, we just went over, we owe $91,828.
Good.
Answer that?
Yes, it did. All right. So what is RMLO?
RMLO. L-O. Hold on. RMLO is a residential mortgage loan officer.
Okay. And what is their primary role for someone like us?
So their primary role for someone like us is to underwrite a loan. If we were extending financing to someone else, we would need to have that loan underwritten, which is where we have them evaluate their affordability, and it qualifies them on income and a few other things.
So yeah. So what it does is it allows us to stay compliant with Dodd-Frank and the SAFE Act, and allows us to basically offer credit to buyers. So this comes into play when we are going to be the person creating a note, right? So if I'm buying your house, Jonathan, and I'm working out terms with you, in essence, you're the one creating the note to me, even though I might be the one telling you how it's going to be done. But if I now sell that property to another individual, an owner occupant, and I create that note to that person, now that's where I fall under the SAFE Act and the Dodd-Frank guidelines. And to stay compliant, we want to use a registered mortgage loan originator to make sure that we've underwritten that we're selling this property to someone that can actually afford to buy it, and that we have stayed within the guidelines of all the different kinds of lending practices. This will keep us out of trouble. And if you have not listened to the two episodes that we did with, I think it's Russ Donahue.
And, right.
Go back and listen. Super important to be able to use. And he's someone that can help you in any number of, I mean, he works in like 40 states or something like that.
Yeah. And I got that wrong, Jeff. I said a residential mortgage loan officer.
It's the same thing, really.
Yeah.
I think even Russ referred to himself as an officer, and I'm the one that refers to him as originator. So I think either one works.
Okay, cool. Okay.
All right. What strategy gives no recourse to the seller?
So subject two gives no recourse to the seller because they're simply deeding over the property subject to the existing debt, and there is no second note recorded on the property, no trust deed or mortgage.
So can we talk about why, you know, when does that even become important to us, and what kinds of things should we be doing to not only protect ourselves, but protect our seller, you know, based on what we may want to do with this property?
So to protect our seller.
Let me try to make that a little more clear. If we were going to hold this property, is there anything that we really need to do in terms of protecting ourselves or protecting the seller when we take the property subject to?
So if we're to hold it?
Yeah. If we were going to hold it, you know, as a rental, as we were going to stay in the middle.
So to protect ourselves, we definitely would want to get insurance, a second insurance policy. And we would want to get access, at least online access to the loan or you know, to the mortgage dashboard. And to protect all parties, we could put in, we can make payments to a third party escrow company, and that third party escrow company can make, it can assure the seller that we're making those payments. Does that answer your question?
So really what I'm trying to get at is, if we're going to be the one holding the property, then we're probably comfortable taking the property subject to and not too many issues.
Are you going down like, so what we should not do with a subject to is hold?
Yes, basically.
Yeah. So what we should not do with a subject to is wholesale the property to another buyer, that, and that buyer might hold it as a long-term rental. In the short term, it's not as important. You know, if they're looking to turn the property over in, you know, 6 months, a year's time, something like that. But you get in trouble where you wholesale the property that's been subject to you to another buyer who defaults on the loan, and then you have no knowledge of it. And then the seller calls you back and say, hey, my credit's ruined because payments haven't been made, and now they're possibly foreclosing. So there's the potential of a lawsuit there.
Exactly. What we want to do is be careful protecting ourselves, because if we do assign a contract and we're giving this buyer basically, you know, full control of this property, and the seller no recourse, we don't want this falling back on us, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Okay. All right. All right. So what strategy has a tenant buyer?
A tenant buyer is a lease option. It's just that they are leasing the place. So they're a tenant and they plan on buying it.
You know how many times I must hear that I either read through Facebook posts or I hear people describing that they have a tenant buyer, but there's no lease option. It's a owner financing situation, and they're still referring to them as a tenant buyer.
Right.
You need myself. Yeah. Well, everyone needs to get confident enough to know which terminology to use, because it can get very confusing if you're talking to someone that does understand and you're throwing out these terms and they don't really apply.
Right.
Tenant buyer is when they are renting with an option to buy, not when they, you know, have a contract for deed or an all-inclusive trustee, then they are a buyer.
Or an owner, and you've corrected me on this before, Jeff.
Well, it's like I said, it's an issue that comes up with a lot of people, and what you don't want to end up doing is talking to a seller, really confusing them, or talking to a potential buyer that you're working with and confusing them. So
right,
just understanding some of the terminology is important.
Right, that is true.
All right, so last question, and it's like a two-part question. What's the least important component of an owner financing deal and why?
Okay, what's the most important component to an owner finance?
Least important.
Oh, what's the least component to an owner finance deal?
Yep.
Least
component. What are the components of an owner financing deal?
So components are, let's talk about that. So components are the principal balance, purchase price, the term, interest rate, down payment, and then whether or not there's a balloon. Okay. I get that right?
Yeah. So what's the least important out of all those?
So the least important is, let me think about this. So
you know it for sure.
Let me go through this. So the most important, I think, is payment and down payment. So your monthly payment and down payment, because that always determines whether or not the deal works.
Yep.
So interest rate is another big component of that, because, you know, the higher the interest rate, the more your payment's going to be. So I would say the balloon payment.
Nope.
Oh.
You're right there. You know this.
Huh?
You know this.
So, would the term then?
Nope.
So it's not the term, not interest rate, not down payment, not the balloon payment.
There's only like one more.
What am I missing? So down payment,
price,
interest rate. Oh, purchase price. Duh. I said that. Yeah. Okay.
Why is that? Why would purchase price be the least important?
Because it doesn't matter as long as the monthly payment works. You can pay a seller more as long as the monthly payment works, and you everything evolves around that monthly payment as far as strategy, whether you're renting the property out, whether you're wholesaling it to a landlord, or whether you're wholesaling it to another tenant buyer or wholetailing it. That's why. So the payment matters the most. The monthly payment matters the most, because that
payment and down payment, I would agree.
And down payment, because we always have to get in light. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So exactly right. That, the purchase price is going to be our least important, because we can overcome overpaying for a property. And the way we structure some of the other terms, we can extend the term. We could do principal only payments, a really low interest rate. Hey, if I told you, Jonathan, I'll pay you $1 million for your $400,000 home, but I'm paying you $200 a month until paid. Would that work for you?
Yeah, sure.
It would work for me, right? I don't care if it takes 100 years.
Right.
It's all right. I better be careful to know that, I don't want a balloon payment in there, or... I don't want to be forced to sell at some point in the future, but if I don't have those two issues, sure, no problem. I'm happy to pay you. I'll pay you $500 a month. How's that for your $1 billion property?
It sounds a little more reasonable.
There you go. All right. So why don't we wrap this up and we will do another round of this. And is this helpful to you?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Good. I hope it's helpful to our listeners as well. I think it's a good reminder. And we're trying to answer some questions as we go, dive a little deeper.
Okay, cool. All right, guys. Hope you've enjoyed this and I hope that you guys are learning something as well. And you're trying to answer these questions yourself, as you should be, to find out really how much you know about creative financing. I think this is an excellent series. You know, it keeps me on my toes, puts me in the hot seat. And, you know, you guys, you know, this show has always been about my journey learning creative financing from the master, Jeff Rappaport. So hopefully you guys are doing the same thing. Guys, you can reach us online. All of our episodes are archived at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. We're on Facebook and we have a Facebook group, the Creative Financing Podcast there. So if you guys have deals you're working on, we're trying to continue to build that community. Please post the details there and don't leave them on the Creative Financing Hotline, because we, you know, we struggle to get back with people in a timely manner. If you guys are interested in learning how to do this and you want to, you know, kind of a step-by-step way of doing that, we have a video that Jeff made where he goes through a deal entirely from start to finish, step-by-step, how he comes up with his offers. Go check that out if you haven't already, by texting CFP to our hotline number 877-409-8090. And that'll give you a link to get access to that video. So definitely go check that out. And then if you like that format, what we have in the works right now is the Creative Financing Academy. And it's going to be a video-based step-by-step system on learning creative financing. And it's, you know, specifically for creative financing. So if you're interested in that, let us know. You can hit us up on our hotline there as well. And we will be rolling that out in the near future. I don't want to put a date on it because we seem to always push it back out. But
it's coming.
You know, it's you know, it really takes a lot of work to put an educational program together, and that's what we're learning. If you guys are interested in Jeff's apprenticeship program, and Jeff said that he wanted to work with twice as many people this year, hit us up at, well, hit Rebecca up, send her an email requesting information about the apprenticeship. And that is Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, at weofferoptions.com. Anything I missed there, Jeff?
Nope. And if you're interested in the apprentice program or our new program on creative financing, you could call the hotline still. I'm happy to still deal with calls from that. I just don't want you to leave your deals because by the time I get to it, it's, you know, 3, 4, 5 days later. And, you know, you may have needed that, you know, 3, 4, 5 days sooner. So yeah, I don't want you to do that. Join our Facebook group for any questions or deal structuring. Call our hotline or reach out to Rebecca for our apprentice or flip our Creative Financing Academy.
Yep. And if you're interested in the apprenticeship, I think just hit up Rebecca via email is the fastest way to get that information so that Jeff isn't bottlenecking the process.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Hey guys, till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.